Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Pranatu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vaditamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I want to do 14 again. There's a couple of things I didn't do on 14. Prate bravini tarumeni bodha. Prate bravini tarumeni bodha. Swargyam agnim nachiketa prajanan. Swargyam agnim nachiketa prajanan. Anantalokaptimato pratishtam. Anantalokaptimato pratishtam. Viditvametam nihitam guhayam. Viditvametam nihitam guhayam. Prate bravini tad u me nibodha. Swargyam agnim nachiketaha prajanam. Ananta loka aptim ataha pratishtam vidhi tvam etam nihitam guhayam. So, in the second line, he says, hey, nachiketaha, prajanan, knowing, present participle, prajanan, knowing this swargyam agni, this agni ritual that will bring a person to swarga, which takes a person to swarga, so this swargyam agnim, the agni ritual that takes a person to swarga, I will tell that to you. Pravimi means I will say to you, pravimi, that pra really goes to the verb. And in Vedic Sanskrit, they'll separate the upasarga, the preposition, from the verb, so that pravimi means I will teach to you, I will teach that to you. So, tadu me nibodha. May you pay close attention. Play to my words. That me means me vaja. To my words. Pay close attention. Remember, as Shankara calls it, the ekagrita. But don't let your mind wander. Wander. Pay attention. And I'll teach you that, which, yes, it is known to me. Because in the previous verse, Nachiketa says, I know that you know this, right? And so now, Mrityu says, yes, I do know. And I will teach you that, but now pay close attention. And then he says, Ananta loka aptim. He says, that swargyam agni, that agni that leads to swarga, this ananta loka optim is the attainment, or that swargyam, to attain that swarga. It's the gain of a loka which has limitless potential, ananta, right? It's not non-dual. Talking about swarga loka that lasts for really a long time, as long as the creation is manifest, and it has infinite possibilities available to you as you desire them. So that's the meaning of that ananta loka optim. And it is pratishtam. Pratishtam means it has virat, and this is get more into the next verse. It has virat is the pratishta. Virat is in the Mandukya Upanishad, right? Ishvara has three names. Ishvara is, if we just say Ishvara, I'm talking about Brahman, conscious being, infinite conscious being, plus the Maya Upadhi. Right? That is Ishvara. When Ishvara manifests, and the first manifestation is called Hiranyagarbha, that's the Sameshti Sukshma Upadhi. Sameshti means the whole creation, looking at the whole creation from the standpoint of the subtle Upadhi. Right? That's what we call Hiranyagarbha. It's like the Sukshma Sharira, but Sameshti total. Virat includes the physical body, the Sameshti Stula Sharira. And so Virat is absolutely complete. It's the complete manifestation of Ishvara. And so Virat is considered the Pratishta, the one who really is there before, and we'll see this in the next verse, before all of the pranis, all of the living beings take birth, Virat has to be there, right? Because all of the living pranis, the pranis here that have a upadi, that have a body, the material of that body and the place of existence for that body is Virat. Okay? And Virat also is said to have initial manifestation in terms of the sun, the fire, and the air. Okay? Plus being the entire physical upadi, Agni, when the physical Agni is a manifestation of Virat, right? And when we have a fire ritual, that fire itself is Virat, and Virat is considered the pratishtha, the very basis of the whole creation, right? Because all of the things that, in terms of the physical creation, not in terms of Brahman, but in terms of the physical creation. So Virat, as Ishwara, Virat is the pratishtha. It's the basis, it's the pratishtha is that which holds everything. It's called the pratishtha. So Virat is considered the pratishtha for this ritual and for all of the pranis who are going to perform this ritual. I'll say a little bit more in the next verse. And so he says, may you know, tvam viddi etam, may you know this, right? I'm going to teach you this. May you know this, which is nihitum guhayam. Guhayam. Swamiji talks about this like this. May you know this, which is there resting in my buddhi. Mrityu is saying, this is in my buddhi. I haven't taught this before. Okay? There's another way. Shankara takes it slightly different. It's resting there in the buddhi of the wise, of those who have been taught this. It's there hidden in their buddhi. Guha also means a cave. Sometimes the buddhi is viewed as a cave, something that's hidden deeply in a cave, but it also just means the buddhi. So this is resting, the implication is this is resting hidden, unmanifest in my buddhi, and I'm going to give this to you. So that's Swamiji takes this. And so here, he says more about it now. He says, this, now what's being said is the Shruti speaking. So he says, idam shrutehe vachana, now the words of the Shruti that are going to go into more praise about this. Okay. So he says, lokadi magnim tanuvacha tasmai, lokadi magnim tanuvacha tasmai, ya ishtaka ya vatirva yatava, ya ishtaka ya vatirva yatava. Sachapi tat pratyavadat yatoktam. Sachapi tat pratyavadat yatoktam. Atasya mrityu punareva hatushtaha. Atasya mrityu punareva hatushtaha. Loka adim agnim tam uvacha tasmai ya ishtaka yavatir va yatava sacha api tat pratyavadat yatoktam ata asya mrityuhu punar eva aha tushtaha. So now the Shruti says, tam uvacha tasmai, he, mrityu, told tam that. Tasmai, to him, to Nachiketas. So Mrityu told that to Nachiketas. What did he tell? Loka adim agni. That ritual, that agni, which is as Virat, the loka adim, which comes before all the lokas. So loka means worlds, but it also means people. So it comes before, and people here means pranis. So that loka, the loka of Virat, right? That Agni is the first, has come first before all of the pranis, all of the living beings. Because before the living beings can come, can be manifest in Virat, Virat has to be there. In other words, just imagine, this whole physical unit, the manifest universe is here, but the manifest universe has to be here for the pranis to be here, the living beings to be here. So Virat comes first. And so Agni, the sun, and the air are the manifestations of Virat, what are worshipped as Virat, even though the whole cosmos is, the whole manifest cosmos is Virat, is Ishvara in the form of the whole physical cosmos. But Agni is worshipped as Virat. And so here, with this ritual, he says, I will tell you that Agni, which is there first, Adi, before all of the pranis, right? So loka adim agnim temuvajatasmai. So he tells, so Mrityu, Yama, tells that Agni ritual, which is there before, as Virat, there before any of the pranis, he tells tasmai to him. And in what way does he tell? What is he going to tell? First of all, he says, ya ishtakaha. Ya ishtakaha, yaha ishtakaha. Those which are the type of bricks. An ishtaka is a particular type of brick that's used in the sacrificial rites, in making the altar, the sacrificial altar. Mm-hmm. There's different types of bricks. The ishtaka is a particular type of brick that's used when you lay up the altar. Then he says, yavati hiva. He also tells how many bricks. Mm. These are all really important. It's a particular type of brick. There's a certain number of bricks. And then also yatava, just as how they are laid out. So there's ishtaka, the ishtakas, the bricks, the number of bricks, and how they're to be laid out. It's all very particular. Even south, north, east, west, all of this type of thing, how high it's going to be, the exact size, the exact directions. So these things have to be followed actually meticulously. If you were to look at some of the rituals, like in the Yajurveda, when they really go into all of the details of how the ritual is to be laid out, everything is very, very specific, including the day and the time they should be done, right? So all of that. So Yama explains all of this in detail to Nachiketas, and then he says, and so having explained all of this in detail, and so Swamiji, when he's talking about it, he says, he's not explaining it here because this is just a story. This is a story. So he's only telling you, you know, in one or two lines what he did. But actually, if you were to explain this all in detail, it's quite involved. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so Mrityu explained exactly how this ritual was to be performed to Nachiketas, and so he said, Sacha api tat pratyavadat yatoktam. And he, Nachiketas, he pratyavadat means repeated that. Mm. Tat means that. And then Nachiketas repeated that yatoktam exactly as it had, just as it had been said. Okay. So Yama taught him, Nachiketas repeated it verbatim. Remember that nibodha? Pay attention, listen carefully, pay attention, don't forget. So then he told him everything, then Nachiketas repeated it verbatim. And he says, Atta-then, asya mrityuhu punara eva, aha tushtaha, and then Mrityu, being pleased, right? Tushtaha means pleased. Mm-hmm. He then again said asya to him. So Mrityu felt pleased after he heard Nachiketas, that Medha Shakti say it all perfectly. He felt pleased, and then he said again to him, Satyam. This is what he said.
Tam tamabravid priyamano mahatma. Param tavead yadadami bhuyaha. Param tadevad yadadami bhuyaha. Tavaiva namna bhavita yamaknihi. Tavaiva namna bhavita yamaknihi. Shrinkam che mam anekarupam grahana. Shrinkam che mam anekarupam grahana. Tam abravit priyamanaha mahatma. Varam taga iha adya. Dadami bhuyaha tava eva namna bhavita ayam agnihi shrinkam cha imam anekarupam grahana.
So now the Shruti's still telling the story. He says, tam abravit, he said to him, right? Who? Mahatma, that great souled one, Yama. It's a name for Yama, Mahatma. That Mahatma, Yama, Lord Machu, Priyamanaha, feeling pleased. So Yama, feeling pleased, he said to him, to Nachiketas, Varam Tava, a boon for you here today. Tava means for you, so a boon, varam, a boon. Tava, for you, right? Iha, here, adya, today, now. Dadami, I'm giving. I'm going to give you a boon here today. Buyaha, again, means another. I've given you three boons, but because I'm so pleased that you were able to repeat this so verbatim, so clearly, you know, I feel so happy. I'm going to give you right now here another boon, okay? So then he says, this is the first boon. Tava eva nāna bhavita ayam agnihi. He says, ayam agnihi, this ritual, ayam, this agni, this fire ritual, will become, will be, bhavita, will be by your name, will be known, the idea. This ritual is going to go by your name. From now on, this ritual, this Agni ritual that takes everybody to Swarga, is going to be called by your name. Okay? Only by Teva, Teva Eva, by your name indeed, by only your name. So it will be known as the Nachiketas Agni. Right? And so if we say the Nachiketa Agni or something like that, it's what it's going to be called from now on. And then he says, Shrinkam cha imam ekarupam grahana. And grahana, he gave a shrinka. He says, anekarupam. And then he gave, and he gave this, he gave this like necklace, multi-jeweled necklace. Anekarupam, that's with many forms. But some Swamiji calls it like the Navaratna. I have it. This is a Navaratna. It has all of the nine precious stones.
And the planets.
That represent all of the planets. And it's considered something that will bring you a lot of prosperity and wealth and well-being. So it's, so Swamiji said, like the Navaratna, you know. He says, this multi-jeweled shrinka necklace. There's another things, ways you can take it also. That Shankara says you can take it as instead of aneka being many and varied of many forms, the shrinka can be different rituals that can be used in many different ways to have meant to accomplish many different things, or you can just take it as a multi-jeweled necklace that has that particular potency. So he gave him, that. I was reading what Paramarthananda's Avinash gave some sort of a summary of Paramarthananda's teaching of this, and in that summary he said, but Nachiketas didn't accept it. But I don't know if Swami Paramarthanandaji said that or not, but there's nothing from Swamiji or any of the commentaries that say Nachiketas didn't accept it. Now there could be something from Anandagiri, which is a commentator on Shankara, that would say, you probably didn't accept that because what would he do with those jewels or something like that. But there's nothing that Swamiji says about that, and there's never anything in the commentary about that. So I would just hold that with interest, if that's actually what Paramarthananda said and where he got that information. But just know that that's not always the way that it's understood. So just make for your to make note of that. So then he says, having given him those two things, then Yama again is praising, or the Shastras is praising exactly this ritual. So let's read that. 17. Trinachiketas trivirethya sandhi. Trinachiketas tribiretya sandhi, Trikarmakrit tarati janma mityu, Trikarmakrit tarati janma mityu, Brahmajipnyam devamidyam viditvam. jajnam deva midyam viritva. Deva midyam viritva. Deva midyam viritva. Nichaya me mam shanti mityanta niti. Nichaya me mam shanti mityanta niti. Sorry. Nichaya me mam shanti mityanta niti. Nichaya me mam shanti mityanta niti. Trinachiketaha tribihi etya sandhyam. Tri karmakrit tadati. Janmanritu Brahmajagnam Devam Idyam Viritwa Nichaya Meman Nichaya Imam Shantim Atyantam Eti. So here he says the Tri Nachiketaha Tribihi Etya Sandim. So the first thing he says is the one who is now a Tri Nachiketaha, this Nachiketa ritual, now he's calling it the Tri Nachiketa ritual, because as we're going to see, this Nachiketa Agni has to be performed three times. Mm-hmm. Tri means three. Mm-hmm. So Tri Nachiketaha is the one who has performed the Nachiketa Agni three times. Mm-hmm. It's called the Tri Nachiketaha. That's the name of it now. Good. So now, the one who has performed the Nachiketa Agni, this Agni, three times, then he also, but now he says, Tribihi Etya Sandhim. He says, he's the one who's performed it three times, having gained the Sandhi. Sandhi means being connected with, having been connected with the three, Tribihi. What three means connected, according to the Shankara Bhasha in Swamiji? Being connected with the mother, meaning having learned from the mother and have the mother's blessings. Being connected with the father and has the father's blessings. And being connected with the acharya, the teacher, their acharya, and have the blessings of the teacher. Mm. The idea is this. If these blessings aren't there, from the mother, the father, and the acharya, the teacher, then your behavior has probably not been dharmic. Mm-hmm. So, Swamiji makes a joke here, a kind of a joke. You're not going to get the blessings of this ritual if you're killing people or hurting people or bringing about some injury. So first of all, you have to live within dharma. Being blessed by that dharma, then if you're living within dharma, and you know the way you treat your parents, your mother and your father and your gurus, your teachers, are in all of the Upanishads, they're always bringing that about, you know. Honor your mother, honor your father, honor your teachers. So you need their blessings. Mm-hmm. Because what's wrong? What have you done if they're not giving you their blessings? What have you done? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we have to behave in such a way that they feel happy with you. Right? So that's very, very interesting. How do we do our best? How to make them be happy with us? Yeah. So with their blessings, then the Tri Karmakrit, the one who has done the karma three times, krit means done, three karma. So the one who has done this ritual three times, being a Tri Nachiketaha, that person who did the ritual, he or she did the ritual three times, with the blessing, having with it being in connection with the family, you know. Also, there's another way of taking it, though this is the one that's, this first one is the first one that Shankara gives. And it's also the one that Swamiji ended up saying something like, this one's good enough, you don't need the others. But then he gave the others anyway. So, the others one, what was it? I just found it here. Or he says, or you can take it like this for the three. Being connected to the Vedas, the Smriti, like the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, all of the Vedas, and the Shishtas. The Shishtas are the Dharmis, the teachers, who are carrying in themselves the Vedas and the Smritis, their behavior. So being in harmony with them, you know. Though the Mata, Pita, and Acharya would be that, the same would be if you are being held within the Vedas and the Smritis, which are all Dharma Shastras, you know, and then you're held by the behavior of the Shishta Purushas, the Shrestha Purushas. Then another thing he says, or it could be this, it could be Pratyaksha Anumana and Agama. Because Pratyaksha means your experience, right? Anumana is inference, logic, right? And Agama is the Shastra, the traditions. So if you're connected with all of those, then you'll have clarity. So he gives these three things. The first one, though, is that your mother, your father, and the Shrestha Purushas, the Acharyas, you know, be pleased with you. So that being so, the whole idea is that that you are valued be toward Dharma and not toward just not be succumbing, don't let your behavior succumb to raga dvesha at the expense of Dharma. Because if it does, raga dvesha means your likes and dislikes. So if you succumb to your desires at the expense of Dharma, then you won't have Shanti. The Shanti will be gone. And so keeping that in mind, he says, so the one who has done the Nachiketa Agni three times, right? And following Dharma, Tadati Janma Mrityu, such a one crosses birth and death, Janma Mrityu. And then he says, more about it, he crosses birth and death, and then he says, Brahma Jagnyam Devam Idyam Viditwa. And then, Viditwa here means doing upasana. Then doing upasana on Brahmaja Nyam. Brahmaja is Virat. Virat means the Ishwar identified with the entire Stula Prapancha, the entire physical creation. Brahmaja means born from Hiranyagarbha, because the subtle comes first. Brahmaji is Hiranyagarbha. The subtle comes first, and then Virat, the physical. And Brahma and Virat is Jnaha Sarvajnaha, omniscient. So Brahma Jagnyam, doing upasana, I'll tell you more about that in a minute, doing upasana on Virat, who is Devam, who is Ishwara. Devam here means selflessness, but it's talking about Ishwara. So doing upasana on Ishwara as Virat, who is Idyam. Idyam means the one who is most adored, most praiseworthy, most worshipped by all beings, Idyam. So doing upasana on him, then Nichaya, understanding, having clarity, understanding, then what? And understanding that, Imam Shantim Atyantam Eti. He goes to this Atyantam Shantim, a Shanti that cannot be surpassed within the relative world, the Shanti that Yama himself enjoys. So the idea is this with upasana, because they're talking about upasana here, not atmajnana, because atmajnana, self-knowledge, is in the next boon. Okay? So now we're talking about upasana. So the upasana on meditation, upasana, when we do an upasana on Virat, I see myself as Virat. There's a resolution of this body, mind, sense organs as being part and parcel of Virat. So the whole jiva is handed over to Virat. And in contemplation, if I hand over the whole of myself to Virat, then I become Virat, because I've been swallowed by Virat. And so this jiva then is seen to resolve into Virat as it become a part of Virat. You see what I mean? And so doing that meditation, I gain shanti because there is nothing there but virat. It's perfect karma yoga. It's a perfect karma yoga because everything is only virat. I've totally surrendered myself to virat. And so that with in that total surrender, I gain an absolute shanti because I'm not asking anything to be different. All of my shraddha is there in Ishvara and in the form of virat. So having done this Nachiketas ritual 3 times, being held within Dharma, plus doing an upasana on the virat, who is the Agni, this is the virat Agni, this particular ritual, I resolve all of the ahankar and everything into virat, and in doing that, I gain the same shanti that Yama himself has. Mm-hmm. So Swamiji, when he's talking about this, he says, you know, Yama has a really terrible job. It's an awful job because nobody wants him. You know? So he's having to tap everybody. I'm sorry, your time's up. It's time to go. No, I don't want to. You know? And so what a job. So how strong you have to be, what kind of shanti you have to have, you know? And then he says, of course, Yama's a jnani. You know? Because he's going to teach Nachiketas all of this knowledge because he's a jnani. He's resting in himself and doing his duty. He's a jiva. You know, Yama's a jiva. He's a devata, but he's a jiva. He has this sthanam. He's a jnani, he's a jiva. He has this particular sthanam, this particular job. He does his job, you know, with an atyantika shanti, with an absolute shanti. So he has the worst job in the world. Having the worst job in the world, he's able to have this authentic ashanti because that is the nature of the self. So enjoying his own being, you know, he's just totally surrendered to virat. There's another level that he has that he will take Nachiketas to, and that is the absolute shanti of my own being that he's talking about. Now, the relative shanti of the one who's a dharmi, has dharma, his commitment to dharma, and has resolved, has surrendered totally to Bhagavan. It's karma yoga. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying some beautiful verses that between the karma yogi and the jnani, there's just a hair's breadth of difference. Because the shanti in the mind is almost identical. It's just that the karma yogi still has kartrutvam. There's still that doership, but all of the raga dvaishas have been surrendered to dharma, and you see everything as Ishwara. We take everything as Ishwara prasad. It's prasad from Ishwara. So there's nothing to upset you. The raga dvaishas are not you're not acting off of your raga dvaishas. Everything that you do is for the sake of dharma, for the sake of Ishwara, and so there's a shanti there. In fact, dharma gives so, just dharma, if you can give up the raga dvaishas and just be committed to dharma, there's a tremendous shanti. Dharma is very stable. You know, dharma is stable. Raga dvaisha is as unstable as you can. It's unstable.
Yeah.
Dharma is not unstable. But when the commitment is to dharma, the commitment to dharma really is the commitment to Ishwara. And so tremendous shanti is there. There's just some kartrutvam that hasn't resolved yet. But it's so close that that mind has the antikarna shuddhi that allows this knowledge to just kind of pour in. Right? That's why the karma yoga, that's what we call upayanishta. Upayanishta is the upaya is the instrument. My antikarna, my mind is the instrument. Right? It needs antikarna shuddhi. Means it needs a certain resolve, a certain peace, in order to be available for this knowledge. Otherwise, if it's burdened with raga dvesha, with all these likes and dislikes and desires, there's not much room for this knowledge to squash in. It's got to find a little crack to go in. Which is why one of the reasons Swamiji was such a master at teaching, because he could make you in the class into a real adhikari. And he could give you temporary antikarana shuddhi. even though when you would walk out the door, your mind would go back into its old ragged dwishes and worries and complexes and all this, in the class, by his tremendous storytelling ability and the jokes that he would make up on the spot, he would get everybody laughing, you know? And that in that laughter, there's a certain freedom, inner freedom. And so your mind enjoys, you know, a well-being and a peace. And in that moment of well-being and peace, you could throw in that knowledge, you know? And the knowledge would get in there and do its little, do its job from underneath, you know? That would really, really help the mind in terms of working through its issues and things, because it would have knowledge. Slip the knowledge in, then the mind would close over, but the knowledge had already, you'd already seen it. You'd already seen, you'd already gotten it. And then the mind would close over, but you already had that knowledge. You know, and so then you would be able to work with that, those ashuddhis, those things that just become sadhanas. It's very clever. He did it very consciously, and he did it very well. Okay. Oh, we're doing here.
Oh. How many more until it starts?
Well, I didn't get quite as far as I wanted to.
Can we skip anything?
No. How many did I get this time? One, two, three, four. Not so many. Well, I'm going to stop anyway.
Okay.
We'll probably finish it next time. It's because I did a long meditation. Swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha ko brahmane vyashubhamastu nityam loka samastha sukhino bhavantu kale varshati parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobharahitah Ramanasantu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amitangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Sometimes you were saying, Swamiji says this, or this is how Swamiji explains it. Are you working off of your memory? Do you have notes in your book?
I have a lot of notes in my book, and sometimes I listen to his tapes also.
Oh, you do.
But this, I wrote so much in this. This is my, this is from 1972.
Wow.
When I was young. This is my first Upanishad, and so I decorated and everything. And then I wrote so many notes in the sides, which is what I like, because I had volumes and volumes of notes But the only ones I still have are the notes that I took in the books.
Keep my notes that way.
So I'm trying to understand what Virat is. Is it Ishwara, but not including Hiranyagarbha, or does it include Hiranyagarbha?
Well, see, it's like if I would say, if we just start with looking at this physical body, that mm-hmm. I have a physical body, which would be under my kosha, that this that's made of food, mm-hmm. but it's pervaded by my subtle body, right? Mm-hmm. So this, in the total creation, this physical body would be likened to Virat. This is called Vishwa, the total is called Virat. Then this is, the subtle body is called Tejasa. The total is called Hiranyagarbha. And then from the causal, it's called Prajna, the total is called Ishwara, the total Maya. So Brahman with Maya is Ishwara. But when Ishwara manifests, if we look at the subtle upadhi, the infinite subtle upadhi, we call that Hiranyagarbha, Virat is from the physical. It's okay. To really understand, it's not like they're different exactly. It's like if you have a dream, we can look at the physical manifestation of the dream and the subtle manifestation and the causal manifestation, but it's not like there's matter. There's some real thing called matter, and then there's something really subtle that's different than the matter. The whole dream is just one material. See what I mean? But there's this, you can, from within the dream, there's a subtle and a physical.
So if you put Virat and Hiranyagarbha together, you have Ishwara?
Well,
you need
we would
the causal
say,
also, is that?
Yeah, we would say you have Brahman, just pure conscious being, mm-hmm. plus the Maya.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That is what we call Ishwara,
mm-hmm.
knowledge in the Maya. When the creation is cyclical, so when the creation comes into manifestation, as it manifests, first the subtle, which would be the 5-10 matras, means the 5 subtle elements, ace, base, air, fire, water, earth, with their cetra, rojas, tamas components. And then that manifests, and then from the tamas components of the subtle elements, it goes through what we call a process of panchikarana, if you want to all listen. It becomes the physical world, right? But it's still all just Maya. Maya, when Maya manifests, the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas manifests as the 5 subtle elements, which then go through a process of Panchikarana to become the physical world. But it's all Ishwara.
Yeah.
So we call Ishwara Virat from the physical standpoint, we call Ishwara Hiranyagarbha from the subtle standpoint.
So.
And from the causal standpoint, we call Ishwara Ishwara, because that's just Brahman plus Maya.
So then
manifest or unmanifest.
They were calling for a meditation on Virat to produce a silent mind. What?
Upasana.
No, Upasana. Could you go over that a little bit?
It's all kind of together. First of all, to do the ritual, you have to have the dharma. Or the ritual is not effective. If you're a murderer and you're doing the ritual, there's no dharma there. The ritual is not going to bless you. So you need that dharma, right? And that ritual will take you on, and we have a couple more verses on this, okay? It's going to take you to the other side of birth and death. It'll take you to Swarga Loka. But if you also do the Upasana on Virat, then all of the Raga Dveshas and all of the kind of the Ajnanam-born Adharmas will be neutralized. That will give you an Atyantika Shanti, the same Shanti that really Yama has. That comes about from the Upasana. In this life itself, next verse you'll say, in this life itself, before you go over and enjoy and enjoy Swargaloka, in this life itself you'll be freed from the snares of death that are brought about by a dharma.
And that Upasana, how do we make it real for ourselves? What is it?
Well, you would make it real for yourself, since you're not going to be doing this Agni ritual.
No.
You make it real for yourself, really, in that Karma Yoga Buddhi. That's what that is, really. The Karma Yoga Buddhi is where I realize my whole life, I see all of my experience only as Ishwara. Everything in my experience becomes Ishwara. And so that's why I can have that Prasada Buddhi. You know, if I say that you have that prasada buddhi, that means that the way you receive all of your experience is as prasad. So your response to your experience is with that prasada buddhi, right? Otherwise, your response to your experience is, well, this isn't what I wanted. Because you're operating out of raga dvesha.
Yeah.
I want this, I didn't get this, I'm unhappy. But what if I have the karma yoga buddhi? Then I'm responding always to Ishwara with that prasada buddhi. Swamiji used to tell a lot of nice stories about that, prasada buddhi stories, you know, like when we say the prasada buddhi, in India they would know so well what that means, because whenever you go to a temple, they do the ritual, and then when the rituals are done, they always hand out prasad. And everyone receives that prasad as sacred. Right, it could be water, or just it could be like a leaf of a flower, or some chandis, you know, some sandalwood paste. Whatever it is, or it could be a whole meal, it could be anything, but it's always received as prasad from the Lord. And so there's never going to be any, well, I didn't want that prasad, I want, you know, that's just not the attitude, not going to happen. And one time Paul, one of our friends and one of Swamiji's long-term students said, well, I could see wanting to have the whole meal. He was just joking. But normally when we think of the prasad, that idea won't come, you know? And so what if you view the things that are given to you as prasadam from Bhagavan? It's like the karma pala. The results of your actions, you know, are taken as prasad. That means you've neutralized totally your raga dveshas. There's no reaction in your mind. Because when you're getting prasad, the reaction, if there's a reaction, it's only one of, it's cheerful. I accept cheerfully, you know, what comes my way.
In fact, that's just sometimes. It's difficult. I mean, like, I was taking a nice walk today, you know? And then these guys come along with their bikes talking so loudly and, you know, I have a hard time saying that's
beside. But then I think that's like the little side thing sometimes Swamiji has said, especially like in difficult situations, he said, you know, I get what, and he's serious, he said, I get what I deserve. Because we all get, and he said, we all get what we deserve in the sense this is our karma pala. When you're born on this loka, it's 50-50. It's not swarga loka here. You know, but it's a place, it's a loka where we can really learn and we can mature, you know, and we can gain self-knowledge. But it's not that everything here in taking this birth is going to be easy for you. It's not easy. It's 50-50. All of us have our share of difficulties. And nobody is exempt on this loka.
Really?
Yeah, really. That's what this particular bhulok is about, 50-50. And it's not easy. There are big challenges, you know. Sometimes it's easy and you're just skating along. But then these big things come up that really, really push you. That's how it is. And sometimes it's really hard, and sometimes when those things happen, it's a really difficult situation, that Swami will just say, you know, we get what we deserve. I'm talking about some bad, really hard things that happened in his life, which of course he's not exempt either. Ramana wasn't exempt. Nobody's exempt. We get what we deserve. That's my
So you shouldn't feel flawed then if you get a 50-50 thing. I mean, I keep thinking that, you know, I got dealt a bad hand.
Yeah, like you're being picked on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you've been dealt a bad hand. You've got a lot of hard things in your life and a lot of really good things in your life, too.
Yeah, extremes.
It's a balance, you know. You may have some really big things that you've had to handle, but then you've been given all these wonderful things also. to balance it.
Does this Lord Yama have a murti, a shape, like there's Dakshina Murti?
Yeah, I don't remember what it is, but you could probably look it up for on Google for images. It's really nice. Or, you know, on Bing, you can look for images, and they'll have hundreds of them, images of Lord Yama.
Yeah, because he'll have different mudras and stuff
but
that helps you.
Yeah, I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, okay.
This thing with the connection between Virat and fire, the sun, and air.
Yeah.
But why that rather than, because Virat's the whole physical
the whole
universe,
thing.
Right?
I don't really know. That's how he's worshipped there, like as
fire,
the
sun,
fire and air, yeah.
And
I don't know
anything
about
it. It seems like it's saying, and then even more so fire. Or is that true?
Well,
or,
because the Agni
is
the Virat, if the Virat is the Devata, the Agni Devata,
which
I guess.
Is so important to the sacrifice.
Somehow, yeah.
Can I ask you another thing? Or are you too tired?
Well, ask and I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Well, it actually had to do with something I asked you Sunday. In the sattva.
Okay.
And I wasn't like totally satisfied, I guess, with the answer about self-evident. And I said, self-evident to whom? You know, you said like the whole world can go away, you know, but the self-evident self is still there. But then it seems to me that, and then I said self-evident to whom, and you said self-evident to itself. But that doesn't make sense to me, because like that's...
Then I explained what self-evident, another way of understanding self-evident, is that no pramana, this is how Swamiji will explain it, it doesn't require a pramana to be known.
Mm-hmm.
That means it requires no means of knowledge to be known.
Yeah.
So there's no duality involved in its knownness.
Mm-hmm.
No, so what do we say like that? If in its knownness, what do you mean, Will? It's self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
It's like consciousness doesn't need another consciousness for it to be, it's its own experience without a subject-object duality.
Right, except that it seems to me, and maybe it's too long to say, but it seems to me that, okay, so that there's no universe, nothing, there's just the self.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, but then Brahman doesn't really know Brahman, because Brahman isn't a knower. I mean, Brahman just
No,
is.
But it's not unconscious either.
Mm-hmm.
If it's consciousness, consciousness is its own experience. It doesn't need another consciousness to be conscious of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is its own experience.
No, it doesn't need that. But I mean, it, like from the standpoint of like the body-mind, it's like the mind, it seems to me, the mind, like you say, the mind recognizes that it's mithya. But I would say also the mind recognizes... Brahman, you know,
well,
not as an object, but just like, oh.
Well, that's true in the sense that, not that the mind is objectifying Brahman.
No. Yeah.
Well, if it's not objectifying Brahman, what it's doing is differentiating itself from its own being.
Mm. The mind is differentiating
itself from its own being.
It's Maya self from its own
See, at least once you say Maya, it's mithya. Mithya means that it's totally 100% dependent on something else for its being.
Right.
That being is Brahman.
Right.
And so what gives the me, the consciousness, to the mind is Brahman.
Yeah.
So a language I like is the knownness that the mind enjoys is self-evident Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take away... the mind, the knownness, which is consciousness, the nature of consciousness, is still there. You know, so we say, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known, my body is known, my mind is known, my thoughts are known, I am known. That's self-evident. If I get rid of all of the things that are illumined, what's left is just the knownness that was illumining them, and that's consciousness.
Yeah.
And that doesn't require any type of pramana.
Yeah. Like maybe it's just the word evident, like self-evident, because it seems to sort of imply
Well, it's a technical word. It's swata siddha.
Yeah.
Swata siddha means what? That it's self-evident. That's how we translate it.
Yeah.
But it means that it doesn't require any pramana, any means of knowledge to be known.
Mm.
Where everything else requires a means of knowledge, subject-object relationship, for it to be known. Except the only thing that doesn't require that is Brahman, is consciousness itself.
Occasionally, though, in Vedanta, rarely they use it, talk about it as not knowing, occasionally, right?
Not knowing.
Rarely.
In the Kena Upanishad,
right.
They talk about it can't be known as an object.
That's what they mean by it can't be known. But they do say, you know, if you think you know, you don't know, and if you know, but if you know you don't know, then you know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's right. That's right.
But they're talking about object, like it can't be known. Because that's really confusing for a lot of people. They read that, and if they don't have teaching, then
it has to be taught.
Then they just give up.
They think it's, it's just not knowing is actually being enlightened or something.
But this is just exactly why these Upanishads are not meant to be read.
Yeah.
The Upanishads are meant to be unfolded and taught. They have a whole tradition of teaching.
Yeah,
so
and
those verses are really very powerful verses, but if they're not taught, they'll be just... Anyway, let's go on and on.